Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Carl, and we don't know where Rachel went off to, but this is Down the Rabbit Hole with Rachel, and she will be back momentarily.
I'm here.
There you go. Hi, Rachel.
Hi, everybody. I am so sorry about that. Have we started the show yet? Yeah, it's 7 o'clock now. Oh, good Lord. This is not the greatest introduction, and I am so sorry. Let's just say my landlord's called me, and that was really important. So I guess I'll start over. I don't know what you said already, Carl. Welcome to Down the Rabbit Hole with Rachel. I'm sure that we have already introduced my consummate professional and amazing, amazing co-host, Carl Kafer. You want to say
here.
Hello again, Carl?
Hello.
So have we maybe introduced our special guest for the evening?
No, we have not, because I was leaving that to you, my dear.
Thank you so much, and sorry for the lateness. So tonight we have a super special guest that I actually have a personal connection to, and that is the wonderful slice of hometown amazingness, Keenan Walker, Memphis native here, burgeoning Hollywood actor and, you know, just wonderful general all-around person who also happens to have, like, the coolest job I've ever heard of in my life. So you want to go ahead and say your hellos, Keenan?
Hey, well, hey, I appreciate y'all having me, man. Hello, everybody. My name's Keenan Walker, and as you mentioned, I'm an artist and the duck master at the Peabody Hotel. So I'm just I'm honored to be on the show. Thank you for reaching out to me.
And yes, everybody, you heard that absolutely correct. He is the duck master at the world famous Peabody Hotel in Memphis. And that is actually not how I met him, not the capacity in which I met you, Keenan. I actually, it was kind of funny. We've only met in person the one time, but it was one of the greatest weekends of my life. I swear to God, I made one of my best out-of-state friends, and I just have to give some props to Nicole, my Betty from St. Louis. If you're out there listening, I love your face. So I took myself on a mental health holiday, a little bit pre-pandemic, and decided that since I had some money, I was going to take myself to the nicest place I could think of locally, sort of locally. I mean, it's about 3 hours away from me. And I ended up with a suite on the super exclusive 12th floor of the Peabody. And they happen to have this really cool executive lounge for anybody that had a room on that floor. And I went in because free drinks, who am I to refuse? And I was really, really disappointed. I don't know if you remember that, Keenan. Do you remember how disappointed I was initially?
I do. Yeah, I remember that.
They for being this fancy ass executive, you know, bar and everything, and we were getting the treatment. They didn't have any bourbon.
Right. It was a limited bar. You know, it was a limited bar on the club floor. Like, you mind, it was only happy hour, 5 to 7, so I couldn't bring the whole lobby bar. But, you know, they had a few selections. But, yeah, unfortunately, we did not have bourbon.
Yeah, so I was like, fuck it. I'm here doing some craziness. I'm getting out of my comfort zone, which is bourbon, neat. And I was like, you know what? You seem like a cool guy. I bet you make some cool drinks. Make me a fucking, I don't know, cool drink. I don't even know what this thing was, but it was in a giant glass. It looked like a fucking Georgia O'Keeffe painting just like dripping down in it. It was so colorful. I almost didn't want to drink it because it was so pretty. And let me tell you, this man is quite the mixologist. I met him in the capacity of mixologist and ended up later that night hanging out on the rooftop, staring at the glorious mansion, literal mansion that these ducks live in, on the rooftop of the hotel. I was smoking my cigarettes and hanging out with Mr. Keenan after he got off work and my new friend Nicole, and it was one of the best nights I've ever had. And that is how I met this man, and then found out the next day when he was all in his fancy suit and shit that not only is he one of the best mixologists I've ever seen out of just some random shit behind a limited bar, he also happens to be a duck master. So, like, do you want to tell us about this, Keenan? Can you please explain this to people for me? Because it's really hard. I've been telling people how cool this is, and they're like, this guy, like, he just escorts ducks. And I'm like, it's more than that, you fuckers.
Yeah, like, it's unusual. It's definitely an unusual thing to be a part of. But, like, as you mentioned, I started at the Peabody originally as a concierge. And so I started off in the lobby just giving people directions and booking restaurant reservations. But eventually became the club floor. After 3 months, actually, became the club floor concierge. And that's when I started mixing drinks and hosting the happy hour for people from 9 to 7. But I was also, a week after I was promoted into that position, I was offered the opportunity to become the assistant duck master at that time. So by the time that we met, I was the club floor concierge Thursday, Friday, and Saturday evening. And then on Sundays and Mondays, I was a duck master. I would, you know, handle the duck march ceremony. So basically what the duck master is and what the duck march is at the Peabody Hotel is, you know, since 1940, there's been a ceremony that's happened twice a day. That was started by a man named Edward Pembroke, who was originally hired as a bellman in 1940. But as a young man, he was an animal trainer in the circus. And at the time, the Peabody had these three ducks that were living inside of the lobby fountain. So, but they didn't do anything. They just swam around the fountain. They just, I guess, were just part of the ambiance of the lobby. But since Mr. Pembroke knew how to train animals, he came up with a concept to where, first, let's give these ducks a home on the roof. You know, we'll just call it a duck palace. I mean, the original duck palace was a large cage. The one that's up there now is a $200,000 structure. All right, so coming from the circus, you know, you have the ringmaster. So he created the character
of the
duck. It
looks like
master.
A mansion, too, like full-on plantation mansion up there. They live better than I do, I swear to God.
Yeah, the ducks got it pretty good around there. You know what I mean? But he created the character of the duck master, and he created a ceremony where he switched the original ducks, which were English call ducks, to North American mallard ducks. And one male, and at the time he had two females. And he trained them on how to march from the duck palace on the rooftop across the across the rooftop into the hotel and then into the elevator. And then the ducks would ride down to the lobby floor with him, and then when the doors opened, he would march them up a red carpet into the lobby fountain every morning at 11 o'clock. 5 o'clock, he'd do the ceremony in reverse and march them back to the elevator to take them back up to the duck palace for the rest of the evening. So this the ingenuity of, you know, Mr. Pembroke, you know, this it's become what the Peabody Hotel is known for now, is marching ducks. And I have the privilege of being the, I believe, 7th duck master in history, but the 2nd African-American duck master after Mr. Pembroke, who did it for 51 years. So it's just an unusual occupation to have, but at the same time, it happened organically. I didn't go to the Peabody looking for it, and it's not anything I ever thought that I'd be doing. So to go from, like you said, being a concierge and mixologist and just, you know, kind of, you know, chit-chatting with people in the lounge to marching ducks and now, you know, doing that full time, it's been an amazing journey. It's been a privilege, and I've met a lot of cool people like you. So again, I appreciate the invite.
And I encourage anybody out there, seriously, this was basically a glossed over version of everything, but you can go to the Peabody Hotel, and yeah, you know, they're known for their marching ducks. You know, not their 5-star steakhouse that they have in there. Some of the finest shopping in the South. I mean, the fact that literally I showed up to this place looking like 9 kinds of crazy swamp witch hobo. Ask Keenan. He can verify this for me. I was wearing my pajamas from the day before. I don't remember the last time I brushed my hair. I told you it was a mental health holiday. And they treated me like the queen I needed to feel like for a few days. I mean, the Peabody is so luxurious that I legitimately fell asleep on the floor because the carpet was so plushy. But that's neither here nor there. I encourage anybody out there, if you don't know the amazingness of the Peabody, A, it's a really, really affordable stay, especially for such a luxury hotel. And if you get to go to Carpaccio's Grill and have one of their steaks, or I don't know, chef could probably spit on a plate and it would be gourmet. It's amazing. Please, please, please look at the duck ceremony. If you can't do it in person, if you can't go there and see it, which you can do for free if you're just in the Memphis area and you want to see this cool-ass little procession, you can go into the lobby, like he said, at 11 and 5 every day. You can see the ceremony. It's a big ordeal, red carpets and all that. You can find videos of it online. You can even, I don't know if your page is open or private, Keenan, but if you can find
it's a public page.
Okay. So you can go to Keenan Walker's Facebook page and actually see videos of him personally doing the duck ceremony, and it's really cool, like really, really cool. Plus, there's a really fancy lobby bar right next to the fountain where the ducks swim in, so you can drink some really nice bourbon, because it's on the first floor, not the 12th, apparently.
Right.
And just, like, zone out watching these ducks chill in the lobby. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, so I
do have a quick question. I was just wondering if Keenan basically has any pet names for the duck, and particularly if he calls one Daffy.
Well, you know what? I'll be honest with you. I get new ducks every 3 months, you know, because we cycle them out and release them back to the wild. So I get a new set of 5 ducks every 3 months. And when I started, it's a real intricate process, and we make sure that, you know, we don't keep you too long so they don't become domesticated, and then we release them back to the wild. So it's we make sure the ducks are taken care of. But when I started, like I said, it was a man named Doug Weatherford who was the duck master prior to me, and he's the one who trained me on how to train ducks. And he told me, he's like, Keenan, now look, don't name them, don't hand feed them, don't get too attached to them, because we're going to have to let them go. But keep in mind, like, I started this a concierge. I got you know, recruited into doing this. I didn't ask to do this. They asked me if I'd be willing to fill this role. So I'm like a kid. You know what I mean? Like, you want me to train ducks, and you don't want me to name them. Like, it's like if I gave you a puppy for 3 months, right, and I said, don't get too attached to this puppy, that's impossible, right? So I named all of them. First group, I named all of them. I mean, the male, it wasn't Daffy. It was close. That was Howard. That was Howard the duck.
Right? Good point.
Okay, I can work with Howard. I can definitely work with Howard the duck. That works for me.
Yeah, I had
you just earned so much cred from the ISF film group for bringing that up.
Hey, man, Howard the Duck was the movie growing up, man. Leah Thompson, that's for people from our generation and vintage film lovers. They don't know nothing about that. But there's 4 females. Keep in mind, I got 1 male, 4 females. So I named each one of female ducks after one of my 4 aunts. So I had Diane, Gail, Frankie, and Sarah. I mean, but truth be told, I got incredibly attached to them. Like they got comfortable with me by the second day, which is very unusual for a group of animals to just really respond to you and approach you. I mean, that quickly. Yeah, I mean, even Doug was like, Doug Weatherford, who was a duck master performer, you know, he was like, man, I've never seen that. I was like, you never seen what? He's like, I've never seen them respond to someone so quickly. And I'm like, well, yeah, because these are my ducks. These are my ducks. You know what I'm saying? So I like really had a bond with them. But when it was time to let them go, I was slick heartbroken, man. And I was like, hey, man, my ducks are gone. You know what I'm saying? So I had to learn after that not to name them anymore.
Well, I am impressed that you named the one Howard, though. I got to say, I'm very impressed.
Yeah. I do have, like, another name I apply sometimes. Sometimes I call him Bill and the Waddles. You know what I'm saying? One of a close friend of mine, you know what I'm saying, came up with that to me. You know, Bill and the Waddles. I mean, I think that's hilarious. But sometimes I refer to him as Bill and the Waddles.
Okay, I got that one. That one's good. So beyond, like, ducks and stuff, you have so much more going on. And
yeah.
I need to hear about this. The world needs to hear about what you've been doing because, you know, I've been following you for a little bit, and you had just done, what was that?
Fear Street,
something
right?
City. No.
Fear Street.
No.
What did we say? Fear Street? No.
It was the one from Memphis, the Blue City Blood.
Bluff City Law. Yeah, Bluff City Law.
The
NBC show with Jimmy Smith. Yeah, Bluff City Law. That's right. Yeah, right around that time period, I made an appearance on Bluff City Law.
Yeah, and you had done a few things before that. Like, there was a whole bunch that you had done at one time, like, right when I came into your stratosphere. But, I mean, we start at the beginning. Like I mentioned earlier, Keenan is an aspiring Hollywood actor who's been getting, from what I can tell, larger and larger roles. And, like, I guess we start from the beginning.
I've been very fortunate, because I guess the whole reason why I got into acting, you know, to begin with, it was never about, you know, fame or notoriety or trying to, you know, become a Hollywood celebrity. Like, acting for me, you know, was an outlet, because, you know, I didn't grow up in the best of conditions. You know what I mean? Like, you know, a lot of us have a story to tell, but at the same time, you know, I was surrounded by a lot of negativity and a lot of, you know, trauma and tragic stuff. So acting gave me an opportunity to, like, step outside of my circumstances and be someone else, like, really look through someone else's eyes and walk in someone else's shoes. And my mother, my mom put me in a theater camp in Atlanta, the Alliance Theater Company. She put me in a summer camp when I was 13 years old. And there was just something, you know, to do positive, you know, for the summer. And I'll never forget, I got on stage and I started doing, we were doing these improv exercises, which is kind of, you know, just coming off the top of the head, creating situations and ripping back and forth, you know, with other people. And it was something about that experience, you know what I mean, that was natural at, because that was exactly what I was getting in trouble in school doing. You know what I mean? It was just being witty and coming up with all kind of crazy stuff to say. So that outlet, you know what I mean, just kind of saved my life. So from that point, I just continued to just find, you know, opportunities to act or to get on stage or to play characters. And it all kind of just organically, you know, led to a deep love and passion for movies and films. And my very first job ever was at a movie theater. I'm saying the day I turned 16, I applied when I was 15. I mean, my very first job was at a movie theater called Park 12 Cobb, which is in Marietta, Georgia. And this is 1996. So in 1996, I can pretty much tell you everything that came out that summer. You know what I mean? Independence Day, Twister, Nutty Professor. You know what I mean? All these huge movies, you know, came out.
Lucky
that
fucking
year.
Bastard.
You know what I mean? I literally saw them, like, we used to have these Thursday night screenings, right, for the staff, the day before the new movie would come out. And it would be like these midnight screenings that we would throw, you know, for the staff, you know, every Thursday night or Friday morning, if you want to look at it that way. So it was something about just the films and wanting to be in films that then kind of honestly, Jurassic Park. When I saw Jurassic Park, that was 1993, when I saw the scene with the two kids getting attacked by the T-Rex, being in that theater, you know what I'm saying, that was the day I was like, I want to do what they're doing. I want to be in movies. I want to be on that screen doing what they're doing. And then I ended up working at a movie theater, and then after that, I ended up working at Blockbuster Video. And this how y'all know this was a minute ago. This is 1997. Blockbuster Video, some of y'all will never know what that was, how big or relevant that was in a time period for movie lovers. Like, if you wanted to watch a movie, you had to go rent video. Yeah, it was a whole process. There was no Redbox. The Redbox was even outdated. There was no Netflix, none of that. Yeah, Blockbuster Video. So it just so happened to be working with this girl named Christine. You know what I'm saying? Real cool girl named Christine that worked at Blockbuster with me. And she told me about they were looking for extras for Scream 2. I mean, this is actually, they filmed Scream 2 at Agnes Scott College in Atlanta, Georgia. And she was going down there to see if she could get cast as an extra. So I was like, yo, that's dope. Let me go with you. I'm going to roll with you. And we got down there, and they ended up picking me, and they didn't pick her. You know what I'm saying? But my bad, Christine. I'm sorry about that. But I was like, yo, just leave me down here. I'll find a way home. And that ended up being an extra in Scream 2. And that was like one of my – that's my second time ever being like on a movie set. I was an extra in another movie, a TNT basketball movie, prior to that. But something about being on movie sets just kind of just blew my mind, like seeing the behind-the-scenes process. And plus, this was the sequel to Scream. You know, Scream, when Scream came out, it wasn't just another scary movie. This redefined, you know, horror movies or thrillers. It was groundbreaking when Scream came out. I know because Scream came out in 1996. I was working at the movie theater. You see how this all connects? Keep up with me. Now, my point is, now,
I'm loving it. Keep going.
I mean, I'm on the set for Scream 2, and that ignited this passion to want to, you know what I'm saying, be, you know, on stage and in front of the camera. And then, you know, just by the grace of God, or just by, you know, being in meeting the right people on the right projects, one thing kind of connected to the next. But then 1998, I graduated, you know what I'm saying, high school, and I moved to Atlanta. I mean, I'm sorry, I moved back to Memphis in 1999, started back doing plays. But then I started, you know, doing so many plays and getting connected to people on those projects that some of those people ended up becoming filmmakers. And one of the very first, it was a guy named Rod Pitts. You know what I mean? Rest in peace to the late, great Rod Pitts, who was one of the up-and-coming filmmakers, you know, in Memphis back in 2000, and it's probably 2004, 5, 6, right around there. And I ended up finding a flyer on Beale Street on the ground, you know what I'm saying, for an audition for this movie called Tricks. I mean, so I ended up going to the audition because I had this real strong feeling like if I go down here and I audition, I'm going to get in this movie. I mean, so I auditioned for the movie. I read for one part, I mean, but they liked me so much, they ended up casting me in the lead male part in that movie. And that was my first time really being able to act, you know, as a main character in the film. And that was in 2006. Tricks is on Amazon Prime right now if you want to see that. That's Tricks, the movie. Yeah, it's a shameless plug, but it's part of the story. Keep up with me. But after that, I mean,
plug the shit out of anything you want, please. If you know the platform that we can watch any of your work on, please. Yeah. Loud and proud, buddy. Because I'll be writing it down while you're saying it. We'll be going back over it at the end of the show. That's what we're here for. Shameless plug. We love it. I'm keeping up.
Yeah, I appreciate it. I mean, but Rod Pitts, you know what I'm saying, the next project he was shooting was this movie called 100 Lives, you know what I mean? And there was the main role of, like, the villain in that film, you know what I mean? And keep in mind, 100 Lives is also on Amazon Prime. I mean, it has, you know, the story about a father whose daughter is shot in a drive-by, you know what I mean? And her murder becomes the 100th murder in Memphis that year. So it is a story about this father's struggle to kind of find justice for his daughter, but then how do we also, you know, bring light to how violent Memphis is? And so that's kind of the plot point for that movie. But they were looking for the role, to cast somebody in the role of the villain, you know what I'm saying, the main villain in that movie. And originally they had cast, like, a local rapper, you know what I'm saying, in Memphis. But because of Rod Pitts and the work that we had just done on the movie prior to that, Tricks, he recommended me for an audition. You know what I mean? He's like, I know you cast that role, but I got this guy I worked with in this other film. Just give him an audition. And I ended up auditioning, and I ended up getting cast in that role. I mean, as a character named Diablo. So that just kind of just led to a forward trajectory to, you know, where now I've been acting in Memphis since 1999. I mean, I've stayed consistent as far as, you know, being able to do films and plays, but something kind of changed, you know, after I became Duckmaster, because by that point, you know, having, you know, almost 2 decades of acting experience and then putting that into the Duckmaster platform, it kind of elevated the experience for the people who were coming to see the ceremony. Because when I was originally offered the position, they didn't know I was an actor. They just liked my personality. You know what I mean? But when I stepped in that role, I applied, you know, everything I knew as far as my acting and how to perform and how to, you know, project and, you know, conduct a ceremony. I applied it to the ceremony. And next thing you know, people started taking notice. And some of those people, you know, were Jimmy Smith, who just so happened to stay on the club floor, just like you did. I mean, when Bluff City Law, which was a show on NBC that was filmed in Memphis, you know what I mean, that lasted a season, when they were filming the show, everyone stayed at the Peabody. I just so happened to be the concierge on the club floor, but I also happened to be the Duckmaster. So I met Jimmy Smith on the club floor, as, you know, as the concierge, and then he saw me perform in the lobby as the Duckmaster. And he was blown away by what he found, because he met me personally in one environment, but he saw me professionally in a different environment. And I ended up in the the very last episode of that series. Something organic. Wasn't an audition. You know what I mean? It was being in the right place at the right time.
And that is something I want to say is from having met you, even just the one time that we really met, like it was great. You did seem like a very, just like you keep saying, organic person to me. You have this personality that it's not even like it's a personality. It's not an affectation that most people have, you know. Most people put on a persona. You just are, and you're so great at emoting that in different ways that people really connect with you. I mean, it's like almost 2 years after the fact, and you're still one of my favorite memories. Like when I told Carl a while back, you know, Carl, not only is he my producer and, you know, main host and everything, he's like one of my besties, my uncle from another mother I never had or something. So I talked to him all the time, and he was like, dude, really? And I was, I bragged on you because I was like, yeah, you know, my buddy that's the Doc Master, like, you know, I keep up with him and he's doing like all these new movies and stuff. Like, I'm really excited. And Carl's like, you've got to get this guy on.
I appreciate it.
I didn't think about that.
And I said, well, do your work. Do your work.
That means a lot. Which just involved a short text message, but it still took me a while to do it. But
no,
I am more than stoked to have you here. And so, like, it's really crazy because I can mention, like, all of these big name movies that you were in, but you were mostly like an uncredited person, and that makes me really sad.
Because really some of the those major films, you know, being, you know, background extra or just being someone who walked by in the background, that gave me the opportunity to be on set for hours and hours and hours at a time, sometimes, you know, a few days at a time, because, you know, realistically on a movie set, you can be on set for 3 or 4 days and then only be seen on camera for 15 seconds, depending on who edited it or what role you played in that. You know what I mean? So, or you might not even be seen, period. So, I mean, there was a long run, you know what I'm saying, like during like the 2000s, like the, and after being on, you know, the, like say the Scream set in Atlanta, you know, when movies would come to Memphis, I would find ways to be extras in movies. So, I was in Hustle and Flow. I was in Black Snake Moan. I was in a movie called My Blueberry Nights with Nora Jones and Jude Law. And I was in a movie called Insecure. I played the coffee clerk in that movie. I did a movie called, let me see, what else was there? There was some of the stuff escapes me now. But, you know, I made a lot of connections on those sets. I mean, because a lot of the crew members that would be on those films were also crew members on the other films that were coming through. So certain bonds and relationships that were made previously on set led to those people reaching out to me like, hey, yo, Kenny, you know, we got this other movie that's coming through, man. Here's a number that you should call if you want to audition, man. Come on. You know, so people started looking out for me. And then next thing you know, the uncredited roles started becoming credited roles. But it was all part of the journey.
Right.
And I love that.
I was going to interrupt you for a second. I have a very close friend of mine. We'll try to get him on at one point or another when he's not busy. But he's based in New York, here in the city, and all he does is extra work. He's part of SAG, the Screen Extras Guild. And he makes a good amount of money and a good amount of contacts, and he is always working. So,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
when people look at, oh, he's just an extra, that doesn't mean anything. That's a bunch of crap because you know, you make your connections, and with Ray, he's been doing this for 25, 30 years now, and he's in all these new shows and that sort of thing. And if you look for him, you see him all the time.
Right.
So yeah,
and the thing that people take for granted is, you know, when you're in a film, you're part of history. Like, that's forever. Once that image is captured, that's forever. You know what I mean? And so to be able to say I played a small part in a memorable or historic movie, like that's an honor. You've been time stamped and have left a legacy in that way. You know what I mean? I don't know. Maybe I'll just look at things deeper. But everything plays a part. There's something, you know, you can't be focused on the stuff in that's in front of you. If there's nothing going on in the background to fill in the empty space. I mean, and that's where the actors and the set directors come in. You know what I mean? So, yeah, everything plays a part.
And
absolutely.
You weren't cutting me off earlier, but that's another thing that I find so refreshing about you, Kenan, is that not only are you just this genuinely real and organic person, but you recognize just how lucky you are. And you know, I see you thanking God every day for this. Like, you recognize that you have to make your own place, and you've done that. And it doesn't just happen. You don't just get it all thrown into your lap. Maybe once in a blue moon that happens for somebody, but most of us that doesn't happen to. So you've worked for this, and you recognize that every little bit of work that you have done has gotten you to where you are today. And, I mean, frankly, I'm kind of jealous. It seems like you've got a pretty great life going so far.
I've been blessed. I've been incredibly blessed, but you know what I mean, but consistent. And that was the thing. I always took pride and appreciation, you know, in what I was doing at the time. And then I would just, you know, let whatever was meant to happen next happen. It wasn't, you know, done through like an agent or pre-planning or I'm going to go on this audition. You know, it was just, you know, just appreciating what I was doing in each project or in each role on each set with each crew. And living that experience, and then just, you know, letting whatever was meant to happen next happen. But things just kept happening, and whatever felt right to me, you know what I mean, according to, you know, what the project was or the role or who reached out to me, you know what I mean, or, you know, or how the opportunity was presented, if it felt right, I would do it. You know what I mean? If it made me feel fulfilled, I would do it. You know what I mean? I love the challenge of trying to step so far outside of yourself that you become someone else, like, artistically, like, that's growth, and those, you know what I mean, taking those roles on, you know, forces you to look at things from different perspectives and take things into account that you might not normally in your regular existence, and that makes you a richer person, you know what I mean? So at this point, I just have so many, you know, appreciations for different perspectives and approaches and levels of existence. You know, artistically, professionally, or whatever. I don't know, man. I'm in a good place in my life now, and I do. Like I say, I thank God every day for the things that, you know, I've been blessed to accomplish. But they did not happen overnight. I've been doing it since 1993, and now things are getting to a point to where, you know, you might start recognizing my name for certain projects, or I'm becoming a bigger part of bigger projects that are coming up. But again, it all happened organically. I mean, at this point right now, like, honestly, I can honestly say right now, at this moment in my life, I do not have a manager, I don't have a publicist, I do not have an agent. But I'm still able to operate on a level to where you would think not only that I had all those things, but I had more than that. I had this whole team. I have been blessed. Like, I can't stress that enough. I've been blessed. You know what I mean, along the way to where people who were in positions of power or had the key to the door that I wanted to walk through saw something in me according to what I was already doing, and it gave me an opportunity. And I always would take heed to them while helping somebody else along the way. You know what I mean? I would always take what I learned or opportunities I was given to reach back to feed into somebody else. So, you know, that having gone through that experience wasn't just wasted on me. But I know that it benefited someone else. I always stayed mindful to do that, but I just continued to get, you know, more and more opportunities. Now I'm at the point to where, of course, I will have management and representation, but how I got here was very, very organic. I mean, there's no way I could go backtrack from one point to the next and make it make sense to you logically, but it didn't happen logically. It happened spiritually. I only followed my spirit. I only did what was in my spirit to do, and it connected with something that actually manifested into what we're talking about right now. That's all it was. And it kept happening again. It kept happening again. And now everything that I've done is a true testimony. It's not my resume. I'm saying my faith became my resume, if that makes sense. So, you know, I'm just enjoying the ride.
No, I think it was more than just your pretty fucking face. It was totally your presence, okay? Mm-hmm. It was
my faith.
Okay. I can see that because that is part of
I appreciate that comment, though. Thank you.
I mean, if anybody's curious, just go look at his Facebook page. Keenan's a pretty man. I'm just going to say. I am currently uninterested, but I'm sure that if you're uninvolved, there is anybody out there of your choosing that would probably be very happy to hit you up in the DMs.
that's humbling. I appreciate that. I'm kind of operating in purpose and, more focused on, the work I'm leaving behind versus, too much trivial stuff. But at the same time, I enjoy life. I do have, a wonderful, wonderful woman, by my side that, was beneficial to my life. So, I'm kind of off the market as we speak now. But they keep supporting what I'm doing regardless. You dig?
I'm sure your woman will appreciate hearing that she's definitely got herself a catch there. So whoever you are, lucky you. Lady, pour one out for you.
I want to step in here for a second, if I can. Okay.
So
Keenan, you were talking about your faith, and I was hearing that a lot. And I wanted just to let you know, I have a very slight connection with you. I'm a church organist and choir master, and I went to Chicago in 1998 in August, early August, enter into Concordia University for my master's in church music. And that weekend, the Chicago Gospel Festival happened. So a bunch of us that were there to register went down to the and that was about a week after your uncle died. And your uncle Orlando Draper, and that whole day was dedicated to your uncle, and they actually everyone at the end of the concert came together and sang "Got a Feeling." I also wanted to ask, since you're talking so much about your faith in that, your upbringing, mm-hmm. With your uncle and family and that sort of thing. How did that, mold your beliefs and that sort of thing? Sorry, I had to go there, Rachel.
No, not at all. Actually, I deeply appreciate you going there,
I am loving that you brought that one up, Carl. That's why I'm quiet right now. Just keep going.
I appreciate you sharing that story with me because I didn't know, about that particular, festival and that they dedicated it to Orlando. So shout out to Chicago and the Chicago, it was at the Gospel Music Festival. I thank you for that. My family thanks you for that. But yeah, man.
Tell me that story. I've been waiting for the whole show to hear what his connection to you was because I didn't hear about this until today. And he was waiting to surprise me with it, and I guess you too. So I'm really excited. Yeah. I didn't mean to interrupt. You keep going. This has been fantastic.
I deeply appreciate you asking me that question because my uncle played such a huge, huge, huge part in shaping me to know what was possible through faith. That was one of the highlights of my youth was being able, I was born in Memphis, grew up in Atlanta, but I would come and stay in Memphis every summer because, my mom worked a job and went to school. I came up in a single parent household. So I was from the summers in Memphis, with my grandmother and with my uncle, Orlando Draper. And he used to work at FedEx, and he went to Overton High School, and he started this choir called the Associates. So they were known as Orlando Draper and the Associates. And they used to the band used to rehearse in a shed behind my grandmother's house. So I would always just kind of be, playing with random equipment or messing. I'd just be in the way. But they would let me just kind of hang back and just watch them rehearse. And then the choir would rehearse at a church called Greater Community Temple in North Memphis. So I would attend those rehearsals, and I just watch him do what he was doing. Of course, at this time, I'm 7, 8, 9 years old, somewhere around there. All the way up until my teenage years. But I watched his name become relevant. Like, I watched him go from my grandmother's backyard to now he was on a tape. He had a record deal. and his face was on a tape cover, like a cassette tape cover. My uncle's face was on a cassette tape, which was a huge deal.
Cassette tape.
A cassette tape. Yeah, man, and then next thing you know, his second album, you know, he got nominated for a Grammy. I'm like, you got nominated for, like, an actual Grammy? Like the one that, the same award Michael Jackson has a bunch of? That award, you're nominated for that? I mean, and he was just doing these concerts and then traveling, you know, around the world and performing, you know, and putting on these gospel music workshops that people from around the world, you know, would come and attend. And some of those people were like Kirk Franklin and Yolanda Adams and Shirley Caesar and Donald Lawrence and all these people who were huge names, I mean, in the gospel industry. Now they would attend my uncle's music lovers conferences that he would put on every year. So he showed me, and then he would incorporate me, because, you know what I'm saying, because I do hip, I'm a lyricist too. I mean, so he would allow me to write raps to his songs like Got a Feeling, you know what I mean, at 13, 14 years old, and he would let me perform on stage with him in the choir. They would break the beat down and let me rap, you know what I'm saying, in front of thousands of people as a kid. You know what I mean?
Carl, you know where I'm going with this.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
so,
I know.
So he showed me, you know what I mean, he showed me what was possible. Like, he showed me to think outside the box. And when he was gone, when he passed away, it was 1998, so I was 18 years old. I was at, like, a turbulent place in my life. I was actually moving back to Memphis to be closer to him so I could be under his guidance. You know what I mean? But the school that I was applied to go to, the housing was full, so I had to wait an additional semester, you know what I mean, before I could move. And in that semester, he died. I mean, so I ended up moving back here right after he died. My uncle, my driving force, as far as, you know, what's great in my life is gone. I mean, and I'm in a place where I got to try to figure out who I am. You know what I mean? So going through that journey and, you know, using plays and the music and this and that, I kept what was possible in mind. I always knew that I had some kind of purpose. There was something that I was destined to do, and it was bigger than just, you know, with something small or local. I knew I was destined to do something big because I saw my uncle do it. I knew I came from greatness. You know what I'm saying? I was blessed to see what was possible. So as I've moved forward, as logic or you know, labels or what the cookie-cutter way, the process, how that applies to most people, at certain times I felt like it didn't apply to me. Sometimes I felt like maybe what's going on for them it's not meant for me. Maybe everyone who's telling me that I can't do it are the people who I'm supposed to show that I can. But I got to have faith that this is for me. If I feel like it's meant for me, I'm going to try it. At least if it doesn't work, I'll know, having tried it, that it did not work for me, or at least at that time. But I have to, you know what I'm saying, at least put my best foot forward if I'm led to do it spiritually. And that's, you know, that really I attribute to my uncle and to my grandmother, you know, the late Marie Draper. So yeah, man, they played a huge, huge, huge role in my faith and thinking outside the box and believing that I could. My grandmother used to always drill into me. She used to always say, "Well, you C-A-N because you removed the apostrophe T. You C-A-N because you removed the apostrophe T." I mean,
and that's
kid,
how you know he's from the South, folks. When his grandma is telling him stuff like that, he is a tried and true Southerner. I know exactly what you mean. I mean,
yeah,
I've heard all things about frogs hopping in the rain, and it makes sense if you're from here.
Right, exactly. But I mean, but those words, you know what I'm saying, became relevant, you know, at certain points in my life. I would hear that in the back of my head. Like, everyone keeps telling me what I can't do. But I C-A-N because I moved the apostrophe T. You can't tell me what I can't do. You know what I mean? And so my uncle played a huge role in my faith and my belief in what's possible. So, yeah, thank you again for asking that question, man.
You're more than welcome.
I have to ask you a really, really dumb question, hearkening back to that conversation. One of my favorite things about music, and that's why I don't have a particular kind of music that I like. I find examples in everything. I am a huge fan of the lyrics and the poetry in the music. And I don't know if this is something that like, if you felt up to it or anything, like you mentioned that you're a lyricist and that you've done some like rapping for people before. Like, do you think you could maybe hit us with just a little taste of something?
Oh, yeah, you're talking about like right now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Let me think. Back during that time period. Okay, back during that time period when my uncle passed. I mean, music. Okay. You know, on top of, I guess, acting was another outlet. So that's when I really started putting my life into music. So I remember I did a song called "Sick and Tired," and I'm see how it goes. It says, "Pushed out the womb into doom. All you heard was the boom. Already crying because I know the stress is coming up soon. The doctor placed me in the arms of my mama. She held me close and whispered to me, 'Don't fall victim to the drama. Where's my daddy at? I can't see him. Son, your daddy ain't a man, and in your darkest day, don't you grow up to be him. Used to mess me up a lot when I was younger. My mom was stressing because I kept asking questions, because in my mind I wondered what the hell I did as a kid to make this man just want to leave this up and split. Soon as I got some years added on to my age, I decided I would get brave and go and visit where he stayed. So I hopped my young ass on to an airplane, building up my pain for when I see this half a man. That's when I saw him standing there, breath smelling like liquor with two kids. I later found to be my brother and sister. He said we had to hit the stove to get some food for the fridge to fill my belly and the stomachs of his other two kids. But then, to my surprise, somebody shot my daddy right in front of my eyes. I couldn't even cry because all I felt was sick and tired."
Wow.
Okay. Like, I literally have goosebumps right now. That speaks. I'm so sorry. I'm nerding out a little over here. I like that. It feels very slam poetry, like, and it's got a flow. Penis, is there anything you can't do right now? I mean,
quit.
You just got to remove that apostrophe from everything.
That's the only thing I can't do is quit.
Well, I'm glad to hear that you can't do that, and I am so, so excited about everything that's happening for you. I know that you weren't you in L.A. recently doing something?
Yeah, I was, man. Matter of fact, as far as, like, the recent project, I've done a string of projects that, you know, are about to come out or in post-production now. But, yes, I was in L.A. For a reason right now that I can't disclose, but you'll know very, very, very soon. But I will say that experience, right, and this is a dope story, man, and really, y'all listen to me, man, because this is one of those things that makes no sense, but it's the absolute truth. It's the absolute truth, right? So, like I mentioned earlier, I mentioned the name David Arquette, right?
Yeah.
Now, David Arquette just so happened to, like, see me marching the Ducks one day. I had no idea. Didn't meet him that time. I had no idea that he had ever seen me. And then later on the club floor, that's me years later, probably around the same time, on the club floor, I met two people, Carrie Ann Rossman and Taylor Alden, who were in town making a movie with David Arquette. Now, at the time that I'm talking to him, I didn't know that. These are two people who were in the lounge as I was the club floor concierge. So, make a long story short, you know, we all formed a connection. They came and hung out just like you did, you know what I mean, came back the next day, and we all stayed in touch. Well, later on, the next year, it's now 2020, right around the pandemic, early 2020, they come back in town because they were filming another project with David Arquette. And my friend Taylor told me that David Arquette told her to tell me that I was his hero. And I was like, what? But that don't even make sense. Like, I'm his hero. I'm like, oh, the duck master. That must be what he's talking about. So I made a personal video of me marching the ducks back to the duck palace for David Arquette. It's a personalized 1-minute video of me, giving him a shout out. So I was like, yo, you said I was your hero. So, very humbled by that. So I figured I'd do something for you, right? Plus he has, a tattoo of a family of ducks on his forearm. So,
I did not know that. That is glorious.
Yeah. So I send this video to my friend Taylor, and then next thing you know, about an hour later, I get a phone call, like a FaceTime, three-way phone call, and it's my friend Taylor and David Arquette. And I'm like, yo, it's David Arquette. Like, what's happening?
Like, are
man?
You fucking kidding me right now? That
yeah,
is so awesome.
Like, you know what I mean? So he's like, he's thanking me for this video, and it means so much to him. And again, this reason for the tattoo, that was a personal reason that he ended up sharing with me. But it was a very, very deep-rooted reason why he has these ducks, tattooed on them. And it moved, the video moved him. Like, it really affected him, you know what I mean, in a way to where he wanted to meet me. And he first started following me on Instagram, and then the day after I sent the video, he drove from Jonesboro, Arkansas, where they were filming this movie called Ghosts of the Ozarks. You know what I mean, that Carrie Ann Rossman is a producer on, and that Taylor Alden is acting in.
That's going to be a great one.
That's great. Yeah, it looks like I got an opportunity to see the trailer when I was in L.A. It looked good. And keep in mind, previous to that, they were in this movie called 12-Hour Shift, which was the first movie that she was in town filming when I met them on the club floor. 12-Hour Shift is out now. So you can see that on I think Amazon, or, you know, whatever streaming services. But anyway, David Arquette, dude named Stacy Souther, Carrie Ann, and Taylor. They all drove from Jonesboro, Arkansas to come meet me in person. I mean, and we met at the drive-in because they were showing a trailer for a documentary that he had coming out called You Cannot Kill David Arquette, which is out now. You know what I mean? But they were showing a trailer for that movie at the drive-in. We figured, yo, let's go meet the drive-in. And
which we have to watch, by the way, Carl.
When I say it's one of the best documentaries I've ever seen, I'm not being biased. If you have not seen You Cannot Kill David Arquette, especially if you're a wrestling fan, if you're a wrestling fan, if you're an underdog, you know, an underdog story fan, if you're a fan of someone being told that they can't or they're not, and them proving to themselves that they are, you owe it to yourself to watch. You cannot kill David Arquette. It's on Hulu. Matter of fact, it's on Hulu right now. So after this interview, I would suggest you go to Hulu and watch You Cannot Kill David Arquette again. But again, I don't want to digress. David Arquette, you know what I'm saying, became a friend of mine. To make a long story short, he became a friend of mine. And he started, you know, turning me on to other people, other than telling other people about me. So then my connection, within Hollywood started growing. And one of the people who took a vested interest in me is a legendary man named Paul Rubens. And if you don't know the name Paul Rubens, then you might know the name Pee Wee Herman. Pee Wee Herman.
Oh, yeah.
David Arquette and Pee Wee Herman are best friends. And then David Arquette told Pee Wee Herman about Paul Rubens about me. And then Paul Rubens started showcasing me on his Instagram page. And David called me on three-way. It's the trickle effect. I was called with David Arquette on three-way. But then David Arquette called me on three-way with Pee Wee Herman on the phone. FaceTime. Pee Wee Herman. That's a big deal.
Oh my God.
Someone my age.
And if you've ever seen his Broadway show, it's like the Pee Wee Herman we need as adults. That shit is amazing. And Paul Rubens is just a fantastic actor in person. I did not know that they were best friends and that you also knew Paul Rubens. So you just made what was already a really fucking day, great day, even better, Kenan. Like, I've been looking so forward to this, and, man, this is amazing. So you get FaceTimed by David Arquette and Paul Rubens.
And Paul Rubens, yeah. I mean, and the reason that I was out in L.A. was connected to Paul recommending me to the executive producers of a project and them flying me out there to be on said project. And then while I'm out there, I'm being shown around Hollywood by David Arquette and Carrie Ann Rossman and Taylor. They were out there, too, staying at the Waldorf Astoria in Beverly Hills, you know, because they were, you know, location scouting for a project that will be filmed in October out there, you know, which I'm a part of. But, again, that's part of the testimony. But, you know, the reason
we
I was there
is because, NDAs. It's okay. You don't
have
to talk about it.
Yeah,
I can't
go too deep into certain things. But, all this happened organically, man. So I got the chance to eat dinner at the Polo Lounge at the Beverly Hills Hotel with Paul Rubens and David Arquette. And these folks, like, took me in and just really expressed their appreciation and admiration for what I do, which is so incredibly, you know, backwards. It's just so backwards. I mean, what do you mean that you understand that you all take such a vested interest in what I'm doing? Do you know who you are? Like, I've never felt so out of place in my life. I mean, but after a while, it just felt like, you know what, hey, you worked to get here. Everything,
exactly.
This was not planned. I mean, so enjoy yourself in the moment. So, yeah, I got a chance to kick it in Hollywood. I was blessed to be casting a couple projects while I was out there. And the reason that I was out there will be made public very, very soon. And it's a pretty big deal. But you know, it's a, again, it's just a test. It's a testament to just believing in yourself and believing, you know, if something is for you, then at least you owe it to yourself to try. And if it don't work, and you know, it might not be for you, or you just took the wrong approach. But when nobody else believes in you, and when nobody else, you know, believes that you have what it takes, man, you got to believe. You got to be your biggest fan, and you got to put your best foot forward. I know it sounds cliche, but it's the truth. Like I'm a walking, talking testimony. I cannot take credit for anything I've been blessed to accomplish. I can only take credit for being obedient and doing what I felt like I was purposed to do. That's it. Everything else happened, you know what I'm saying, according to, you know, a plan other than mine.
Well, and I love it. And I can tell all of you that this is an absolute testament. You would think, like you said earlier, Keenan, that guy has like a number one hype squad. No, there's not a fan club. There's not like a promotion team. There's not a manager. There's not shit. It's literally just people like me out there realizing what an amazing talent / just general human being that Keenan Walker is, that, you know, you meet him once and you want to tell everybody, dude, go see the Duckmaster at the Peabody. Also watch him in some movies, because I promise you're not going to regret this shit.
I appreciate
that. And I love that, because you are one of, again, we keep going back to this, but you are literally one of the most organic stories I know of so far, because, like you said, this has all been you. Now, you do have an amazing support system. I mean, I'm not going to lie. People love the fuck out of you. I'm sure somebody would take a bullet for you, some of these people, but it's all just people who believe in you, and I think that that's because we see how much you believe in yourself, and everybody needs that reaffirmation in their lives that, you know, it's worth believing in yourself. It might take a little bit. It's not going to happen on your timeline, but if it's going to happen for you, if it's supposed to happen for you, it's going to happen for you.
Absolutely.
You just have to work for it.
Yeah. Remember, Rachel, one of the things we do here at ISF and at Deviant Legion is we have all these directors that we talk about that do micro-budget. And what they'll all say is, like, don't talk about making a movie. Just make it. Just give it a shot. You know, because if you don't make the effort, it's not going to happen as, you know, no matter how much you want it, you know, and if you only have $100, find a way to do it for $100 or $200 or find people that are going to work with you. And that's the other thing. That's what we try to do here at Deviant Legion with working with Rachel and all the other people that we do. We all support each other, and that support level. And that is a testament to, you know, your wherewithal and your faith and your just belief in yourself.
Right.
So we applaud.
Absolutely.
And,
no question.
And if you don't mind,
we
have a few up-and-coming directors right now, some of which are in the South, some of which are in the California area. I might, like, shoot them your name if they're looking for anybody for some future projects, if that's okay with you.
I appreciate love. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Oh, yeah, we could definitely
awesome.
Do that. That's not a problem.
Yeah, definitely.
I think Austin
it.
Alan Green would really like what Keenan's got.
God knows what he would think about working with Jessica Dodd, but God.
Oh, God, no. Oh, that would be funny. I don't know. Like, I feel like we're really getting to know the Keenan that the world needs to see, and that has just made me so insanely happy today. Normally, I have more, you know, pervasive questions to ask people, but I think we're really just interested in what you've got going on, because your experience has been so natural. It was just meant to happen for you. And I even told Carl that. You can ask him, but before you called in, we were talking, and I was like, one of the things about this guy is, like, you just talk to him, and you know, like, he's doing exactly what he needs to be doing right now, and the universe and God are smiling on this man.
Yeah, I appreciate that. That means a lot. Thank you.
It's definitely not to discount the fact that there's been a whole lot of hard work on your part, and I really appreciate you being able to come here and talk to us about this, because I know that there's a lot of people out there in, you know, not just our ISF group, but a lot of other, you know, listeners, just personal friends of all of ours in the network and things, that are really aspiring to do things like this and maybe don't think that it can happen for them, you know, because it's later in life, not that you're an old guy or anything, but, you know, it's later in their life and they've really not, you know, tried. They don't realize that, I mean, frankly, if you just reach out there for it, sometimes you're going to grab it, even though it seems impossible. I mean, one day you may be able to grab a star, who knows? You never know until you're going to try. And or you're never going to know until you try. And I really respect the fuck out of the fact that you keep trying.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean,
And I just want you to know that when you have further news about these up-and-coming projects, like, you are at this point welcome back anytime you want to shamelessly, not even shamelessly, like, we encourage you to please promote your shit. Now, I am really, really proud to announce that you are one of the few up-and-coming guests, you know, quote unquote, that we've had that actually has a legitimate, like, IMDb page. And I love some of our directors don't even have that. They're like, yeah, I've done 6 movies, but nobody's put them on IMDb. And I'm like, then you need to do it. Like, you need to let people know what you're doing. And all you have to do is start typing in Kenan W, and it's going to pop up in your Google on IMDb. Kenan Walker, the actor from Memphis. And, I mean, don't look at the credits like Cloverfield and Scream 2, because they were great. I want people to see you in more of your full capacity. And I'm hoping that these projects that you're in NDAs with right now are going to really showcase more of you as a more main character, because you are just like, you are exploding with this really restrained talent. Like, you have that ability.
Right.
You can be so restrained, and then you just lose your shit. And before we go, I do have to mention something that I thought was funny on your page the other day. Is one of the things that you talked about doing earlier was, you know, these people recommend you, they call you, and they're like, "Hey, you want to do this thing?" And you're like, "Yeah, I'm going to do the damn thing. Tell me when and where." And the other day you were telling this story about, like, why do I have to keep dying in movies?
Yeah, man. Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. Okay, well, keep in mind then, and I'll lead into what you were talking about. But the things I can speak on, you know, was I have a film that I've completed called Levi Clears Out, which I play Levi. I'm the star of that one. It's directed by a guy named Ron Gephardt.
Yay!
I mean,
that's what I'm hoping for.
That'll be coming soon.
Star title.
There's a pilot that I filmed with David Arquette and Elise Neal and Trinidad James, and Post Malone is an executive producer of it, and Tiger is in it as well, as he's an executive producer, along with David and Christina Arquette and Dre London. And that was called High Heel, which is a crime drama that is set in Memphis, and I play the lead detective in that, Detective Lawrence Musa. So that's
oh my God, I want to see this so hard right now.
we completed the pilot, and that's being shopped around to networks now. So hopefully there'll be some exciting news as far as that. I just finished a film called Killer Instincts, which is a thriller that is set in Memphis, and I play, it's about a series of murders on a college campus, and I play the head of campus security. So I just finished that, but I finished that with a close friend, I consider him a brother, a guy named Princeton James. And if you don't know the name Princeton James, then definitely this is a name that should be on your radar. He's a director, playwright, actor, you know, producer. If you Google the Princeton James Project, I mean, you'll see, you know, a bunch of work that he's done artistically, puts on an acting summer camp, a free camp for the kids, you know, every summer so they can get involved with filmmaking and learn different skills and areas of filmmaking and becoming performers and artists. So Princeton James is somebody who I've considered family for the last almost seven years, but I have been blessed to be in all of his first, like his first play. I was in that, his first music video we ever shot. We did that. First short film, a movie called Junior, which is on my YouTube page. You can go to YouTube, type in Kenan Walker, and then you go to playlist, and you'll see a list of my short films and interviews and things that I've done. So you can definitely check out some of my current work on YouTube. But Princeton referred me, you know what I'm saying, to work on a project. You know, Princeton, up to this point, was one of two people to where if they call me to do something, I'm just going to do it. Like, I'm not even going to ask, you know, what the project is. I'm not going to ask, you know, what the role is, because they have enough integrity to know what I will and won't do. So these certain people refer me for something, I'll do it, no questions asked. So he referred me to work on a project with another notable director named Daniel Farrell. And so I said, okay, cool. I'll go do this project. But I found out the day before that it was a music video. I'm like, okay, dope. All right, I'll do a music video. And it was based off of Goodfellas. So the character that I would kind of be portraying was a character that gets brutally murdered, like stomped out, like I forget his name, Billy Batts. I think it was Billy Batts. I mean, and he was a made man who had just come home from prison, and, you know, they were celebrating him coming home, and they were all at a bar, and Joe Pesci and, you know, Robert De Niro in the scene. And Billy Batts was kind of harassing Joe Pesci's character, who himself now has become a made man, and he was kind of disrespecting him. And then, you know, make a long story short, you know, he ends up getting stomped out and brutally killed. So this is the role that I find out the day before that I'm portraying, because I get a message from the director saying, can you bring some slacks and a white shirt that you don't mind getting blood on? It's like, a shirt I don't mind getting blood on. Why do I need to get blood on me? What's happening? That's when I find out.
Is it my blood?
Right. Like, whose blood is on me? So I get there, find out I'm being stomped out, wrapped up in a sheet, drug across the floor, taken to a park in the middle of the night, put into the trunk of a car. I mean, based off of me taking someone else's recommendation. So if anything else, you know, if you get anything else off of this story, you know, ask questions. Yes, put your faith in people and, you know, and trust people's guidance, but ask questions when someone refers you to do something. But, hey, but you know, all seriousness aside, I appreciate the recommendation. I appreciate working on that project. I really did have a good time with it, but didn't know what I was getting myself into. So learn to ask questions.
You got to stop getting yourself killed. We want to see you live till the end of the movie. You got to stop being a pro, okay?
Yeah, my mom.
Listen, we already have John Sting, so we don't need another one.
Right. Yeah, I'm trying to keep living in the projects that I attach myself to.
Well, I know I sound like such a super nerd, but I am so, so happy that you were able to take some time out and talk to us. This has been so fun for me. So many memories and, like, just, you know, thinking back. And I am just so proud of you. I know that sounds dumb, but I am so proud of the things that you have accomplished, because it's makes me happy to know that there are people out there that can do that, and that there are people just like me and Carl and everybody else out there. I mean, you're from Memphis, you know, I'm from Little Rock, but Memphis is our sister town and actually my second home. So I consider it my hometown, and I consider you one of my hometown boys, and it's so refreshing to be able to hear stories like this. Like, you weren't out there cutting throats and, you know, telling other actors that they just really didn't look right for the part and they were never going to make it. Like, you didn't have to do anything horrible. You just had to be you. And you are the living proof that you can do the damn thing, okay? So,
no, I predicted that. I really appreciate that.
That being said, I think Carl needs to do a damn thing right now because he's got, like, so many things he's exploding to say. I have not let him talk all night because I'm just a horrible host mistress.
No, you're not. No, you're not. I think what we're going to do here is we're going to do a little bit of house cleaning. But first, I want to just congratulate a couple people. First off, I want to congratulate Joe Badon. Joe Badon has been on our podcast several times, and he just got his Kickstarter all finished for his newest short film, The Blood of Dinosaurs. And if you've seen Sister Tempest, you know, well, I like to call Joe the Pope of Odd because you've never seen anything like his films before. You would agree with that, Rachel, would you not?
I think you should call him the Pope of the Peculiar because I like that alliteration better. But yeah,
okay.
I get what you're saying.
Okay, and also we want to congratulate my former partner in podcasting, Stephen Ronquillo. Stephen has a show tomorrow on KSDAD Radio, also hosted by Blog Talk, and it is his 600th show. And we want to absolutely. And also, we have to do we're actually kind of sad here at Deviant Legion because one of our guests who was on the show three times, once with Stephen on KSDAD and then twice on Deviant Legion, his name is Jefferson Richard. Jefferson Richard was a producer, worked with people like Matt Simber and Sylvester Stallone, and directed and did all sorts of things. Well, he passed away earlier this month, earlier in July. And we want to send out our condolences to his family, and we will miss him terribly. Now, that being said, I just want to go and let people know what's going on with us on Blog Talk Radio. Okay, so let me get to episodes here.
And
so
Deviant
Legion
Friday, Network through
right,
Blog Talk
it's
Radio.
The Deviant, yeah, Deviant Legion Network. Right now we have on the 6th, which is Friday, Adam is going to host the Cathode Ray Mission, and they will be doing a show on Doctor Who continuity. On the 7th, I'm going to pass it over to Rachel.
And
that's
we
Saturday.
Will be doing...
What do we have on?
I'm working on it. We will be doing the second Down the Rabbit Hole episode in 1 week. Jesus, guys. I think this is 2 weeks in a row we've had two Rachel episodes. Do you just like me
or
something?
I think so, too. I'm keeping you busy.
So you certainly are. So on Saturday, we will be welcoming back our newest member, TC. Maybe he'll have his own show one day, but right now he is the newest co-host for Down the Rabbit Hole, at least as far as the music series that we've been on a kick on. So Saturday is a show that is very, very special to my heart, and that is because it is a music genre that is very, very, very deeply personally special to me, and that would be One Hit Wonders. We are doing a retrospective of one-hit wonders from the 70s, 80s, and 90s. Carl's got the 70s, I've got the 80s, TC's got the 90s. The list is just mind-blowingly good. You're not going to be hearing any Wham, or, well, Wham was a one-hit wonder, but you're not going to be hearing a lot of your regular stuff here, like you ever do on the rabbit hole. So, yes, we're also going to be talking a lot about how MTV in the 80s changed the ways that we view and hear and even at that point see our media, entertainment, and music. So that is a show that I'm really excited. That's going to be on Saturday, which is the, you said 7th? I don't know. I'm still, like, quarantined here, so I don't know what day it is. I haven't known what day it is for almost 2 years.
Don't worry about it. We're all like that, Rachel. So on
Saturday,
next
Saturday,
Tuesday,
Saturday.
On next Tuesday, which is the 10th, We are going to have director Trent Harris. Trent Harris did a film you should know called Reuben and Ed with Crispin Glover. And Karen Black was in that movie also. He has a direct sequel to that movie coming out, and we'll be talking about that. And with us on that is his good friend Sam Lessem, who was originally with us on the original episode that Trent was on about 6 months ago. And then also on the next Tuesday, which is the 17th, we're going to be welcoming Jordan Young. Jordan Young is the author of a book about musician Spike Jones, who's one of my favorite novelty musicians from the 40s. And Jordan is also the administrator of the Spike Jones Appreciation Society Facebook page. And we'll be talking to him about and listening to some Spike Jones. So that we're going to do on the 17th. We have a lot more going on, but nothing set in stone, but that's what we've got set in stone so far. So back to you, Rachel.
All right. Well, after all of that beautifulness, Keenan, would you like to shamelessly promote all of the places that we can see you and find you?
Absolutely, absolutely. On Facebook, it's Keenan Walker. That's K-E-N-O-N, last name Walker. On Instagram, it's Keenan _ Walker. My YouTube channel, keep in mind, my YouTube channel is kind of where I showcase some of the short films, and I've done media journalism and behind-the-scenes interviews and things of that nature. So if you go to YouTube.com, type in Keenan Walker, you'll see my page on there. And if you go to playlists, it'll break down like the films, web series, commercials, and things of that nature that you can find. So, you know, if you get bored, you can dig around on that on the YouTube stuff. And, you know, preferably there's something on there that'll, you know, inspire you and entertain you. And then, of course, Trix, the movie, is on Trix. The Trix is on Amazon Prime, as well as 100 Lives, the movie, 100 Lives, the movie on Amazon Prime. And like I said, there's some exciting projects, you know, coming out. So just, you know, just stay in tune. And of course, you know, the Duck March. The Duck March happens twice a day, every day. It's advertised at 11 and 5. But really, it's best to be there, you know, no later than 10:30 for the morning ceremony, because that's when I'm rolling the red carpet out. Ceremony actually starts at 10:45. Then I march the ducks into the lobby at 11. For the evening, it's best to be there by 4:30. The ceremony starts at 4:45, and then I march the ducks out at 5:00. So it's always best to be there at least a half hour early, and just stay tuned because you know it's new opportunities and projects present themselves, and there'll be some new stuff to tell. So you know, just stay tuned.
Awesome, and we are definitely hoping to have you back in the future, Keenan. It was so wonderful to talk to you again, and I'm so happy to hear that you are doing so well right now. And just shout outs to everybody that has helped you and will continue helping you in the future. You deserve it, man.
Thank you. And Nicole and both of you, like, I just really appreciate you all, you know, reaching out and giving me that opportunity
Whenever these movies come out, and that, please come back and push the heck out of them for us, okay?
Yeah,
all you got to do is just hit me up on Facebook or whatever and let me know, and we'll schedule you. We're actually looking at moving to some new areas with our podcasting, so it's going to be a lot easier and a lot better for everyone. And I really hope that when these projects come out, we can get some more interviews with you that you can actually talk about the cool shit that's going on. But beyond that, I think it's probably time for all of us to say goodnight.
Absolutely. Again, Keenan, it was a pleasure meeting you and having you on the show.
Likewise. Thank you again.
Thank you.
All right.
Well, let's
call it a night.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us down the rabbit hole. I hope you stay stuck down here with the rest of us. It's a pretty cozy place to be. And beyond that, I guess, just good night, everyone.
Good night.
Good night.